Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody's weekend? I had a fun and interesting weekend. I had to do a bunch of tax stuff like I was telling you guys on Thursday. Took care of all that. Did a massive cleaning. And I've decided I'm pro-cleaning because it's a purification process. You feel like you're cleansing your life as you clean. And you know what it is? It's funny because that's actually not true because I actually hate cleaning in the literal sense, so like actually breaking out like a mop or a Swiffer or vacuum and doing like the old school, like let's literally clean everything. I'm not a fan of that. What I am a fan of is decluttering, so like throwing out old shit and orderliness. Like there's nothing better to me than making something orderly when it's not orderly. And coming up with, like, you know, like a little system or something as to what you're going to do with all your personal stuff. Like, okay, all my stuff is too scattered. I got my deodorant over there in the fucking corner. I got my cologne halfway across the house. Like, what am I going to do? And then you figure, oh, I'm going to put it all right here. And then you make it all orderly. And it's like, oh, why haven't I been doing this since day one? So I'm not a fan of cleaning. I'm a fan of decluttering and organization. That's what I'm a fan of. And as you can tell, very productive, very fruitful weekend, if I don't say so myself. But a lot of news piled up while I was gone. Now, for those of you who didn't hear Thursday's live show, there's also not a show this Friday because my birthday is this weekend. So it's just 4 days this week. But we got a lot of stuff before then, so fear not. We got a big show today. Then later tonight we have a Democratic town hall, which is awesome. They added it last minute. So obviously we'll have a breakdown for that tomorrow for you. We'll likely be live tweeting the shit out of it tonight like I try to do with all the debates and all the town halls and all that different stuff. So a lot to look forward to, and the news piled up while I was gone. So we're going to go ahead and dive headfirst into it today. We got a little somebody's considering running. And when I say somebody, a little somebody, I mean the word little quite literally because the guy is fucking tiny as hell, for those of you who don't know. I'm going to get into that in a second. I'm going to kick it off with that. And we got Donald Trump nonsense, of course, except he's really pulling some brilliant political moves that I'll break down for you. We also got Bernie Sanders. I mean, people across the fucking country are feeling the burn on another level. They're feeling the burn like they have some sort of STD and they can't piss right. That's the way people are feeling the burn. We got marches for Bernie Sanders and all types of stuff. The establishment throwing nonsense questions at him. Hillary Clinton running away from substantive questions. Oh, forget it. I've got Michelle Bachmann later on in the show. God only knows how the fuck she got in the show. Smarmy little 18-year-old Ted Cruz talking about world domination. You don't want to miss a second of it. So let's go ahead and get started here. And we'll do that with the new contender, kind of, maybe, sort of. We're not sure yet, but we're going to find out. The New York Times is reporting that billionaire Michael Bloomberg is considering a run for the White House as an independent. They say, quote, Mr. Bloomberg, who's 73 years old, has already taken concrete steps toward a possible campaign and has indicated to friends and allies that he would be willing to spend at least $1 billion of his fortune on it. All right, let's pause here to just reflect on how absurd this is. In the United States of America, we're now such an obvious oligarchy and kleptocracy that billionaires just muse out loud, yeah, maybe I'll go in and buy this election and buy this race or try my best to do so. And if I have to, I'll spend $1 billion of my own money. Can anybody else who didn't have this kind of bankroll consider, I'll just jump in at the last second and try to win the presidential race? No, because you need money to even be involved in the process or to be considered to be involved in the process in the first place. I mean, the only exceptions to that are people who kind of got in on the ground level into public life a long time ago, and then they've been in Washington for a really long time, or they were heavily involved in state politics for a long time, and they worked up enough of a name to then try to run and do it the way where they have integrity, where they don't take money. Bernie Sanders, by and large, to play in this game of establishment politics, you got to have a lot of money backing you up, because that allows you to buy more ads, that allows you to get your name out there more often, and then that allows the media to start talking about you and taking you seriously. And oftentimes, the mainstream media discusses this as if it's like, nothing, as if you're talking about the weather or something. Like, oh, so this billionaire wants to potentially try to buy the White House and then do whatever he wants because he's super rich. That's cool, right? We'll talk about Marco Rubio versus Jeb Bush. Marco Rubio outraised Jeb Bush this quarter. They don't even mention, hey, poll numbers, support, grassroots populism, are people excited? He outraised him. He sold out better than that guy. Huh? Isn't that great? Let's give him a hand for selling out better than anybody else. All right, guys, this is wonderful, isn't it? What a great democratic system we have here. So Bloomberg's saying I'm going to possibly spend up to $1 billion of my own dollars here. Now, why would he even bother? Well, they go on to explain. If Republicans were to nominate Mr. Trump or Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, a hardline conservative, and Democrats were to pick Mr. Sanders, Mr. Bloomberg has told allies he would likely run. At the same time, these associates said he has grown more frustrated with what he sees as a race gone haywire. A longtime critic of partisan primary elections, Mr. Bloomberg has lamented what he considers Ms. Clinton's lurch to the left in her contest against Mr. Sanders. Oh, I see what's happening here. This guy's a joke. This guy, hook, line, and sinker, fell right into the establishment trap of the reasonable people are centrists, but in reality these are fake centrists because they're corporatists. In order to be a centrist between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party today, you have to be a massive right-winger, and you have to be 100% in favor of corporations and Wall Street and the billionaires taking over. And, of course, Bloomberg is all of those things. So he plays this faux intellectual game of, the left-wing and the right-wing. Neither of these guys are serious. None of these people running for president are serious people. And Hillary Clinton, she's far too liberal now. So I'm going to jump in and be the reasonable, moderate, sane, centrist voice between absolute lunatics and pseudo-fascists like Trump and oh-so-liberal Hillary Clinton. Here's how the American people will respond to your bullshit idea. Dude, nobody hears this and goes, oh, that guy's nailing it. Nobody thinks that. You want to know why? Because people are actually listening to, for example, what Bernie Sanders is saying, and like, oh, that actually is totally reasonable, and that guy seems like a moderate voice. That guy seems, people say, oh my God, democratic socialist, be afraid. But when they hear his ideas, they're like, oh yeah, no, I don't, that's exactly what I'm in favor of. I don't see what the problem is here. And this, for a guy who says Hillary Clinton is too far left, oh, please stop talking. Just go away, run and hide, go make love to your billions of dollars. Are you kidding me? Hillary Clinton is too far left? No, but that's the thing, and that's why this story is so fascinating. Guys like Bloomberg, billionaire idiots like Bloomberg, just totally out of touch with the American people. Have no clue what the American people think or want, cannot explain or describe the rise of a guy like Trump and Bernie Sanders, when, of course, the reality is everybody's so sick of the establishment, they hate it so much, they're like, anything that's anti-establishment, Bernie Sanders! Old socialist Jew atheist, that guy, or Trump, who might be a buffoon with a meerkat on his head, but hey, whatever, at least he's out there saying, I'm not bought, and the other guys are bought. Now, with Trump, it's, of course, he was willing to be bought, but the other billionaires were like, yeah, we're not interested. So that's when he started railing against corruption. But either way, the message is what's resonating, the anti-establishment message from people like Sanders and people like Trump. And this guy, he's clueless. He's like, no, they're both too far or too extreme, one on the right wing, one on the left wing, and I'll be this fake centrist that goes in there and says, all right, guys, let's be reasonable here. Let's all sell out to the establishment. Let's all let Wall Street do whatever the fuck they want. Let's all, play ball here with the powers that be and vote for me because I'll do that. Nobody wants that. The only people who would want that are people in Washington and people in New York. That's it. And I mean, you know, the elitists, quite literally the establishment. They're the only people who would say, yo, yes, a billionaire who wants to do the bidding of other billionaires. Wonderful. And he's also, by the way, confused. Bloomberg is just a fucking mess of ideas and concepts that he hasn't thought out well, but he's a knee-jerk reactionary. You know, he's, I don't like obesity, ban big gulps. Something he quite literally tried to do in New York City. You know, I don't like guns, I'm going to push hard against guns, so he'll do that. But then in the next sentence, he'll, right-wingers are right about economic policy across the board, give Wall Street whatever the fuck they want. He's just a confused dude that nobody likes, and he's like, no, totally, I'm going to run. Now, the best part of this all, a while ago, because he was considering this for a while, he was like, yeah, you know, me and my people, we did some polling, and we tried to figure out how we would do against Hillary Clinton and against Trump if he was running in a general election. And people are like, oh, cool, so how'd that go? He's like, anyway, moving on to the next topic. Let's talk about, wait, why aren't you telling us? Well, the reality is he did the polling, and it was abysmal. So bad that he didn't say what the numbers were. He was like, yeah, no, we did internal polling. Just know I'm considering a run, and we did some polling. That's it. It's like, okay, but how'd you do? Yeah, I don't want to, Look at this joke, man. What a joke he is. And by the way, there's other polling. So he says he did internal polling. Obviously, he sucked in it, or else he would have told the numbers. But there's other polls that have been done on this. The max he would get in any election is 13%. 13%. Why are you wasting your time if that's the best-case scenario? And furthermore, you know the system is massively biased against independents. But since he's got the money, he's like, okay, I can buy this race. But there's one factor that guys like this are missing, that the presidential election is slightly different from Senate races, from the House of Representatives, and from state and local politics. State and local politics, basically a guarantee if you get a big check written to you, you can win the election. Okay, money matters tremendously at that level. House of Representatives and the Senate, by and large, the people who raise the most money end up winning. It's over 90% of the time. 93% was the last number I saw. Presidential race, wee bit different. Because there's a lot of free press involved with that anyway, as long as you're already through the first step of the process. So you sneak in, you know, through the back door, hate to use that term, a guy like Bernie Sanders under the radar. I'm not taking big money, but I'm going to run. And, hey, I've been in Congress for a really long time. I've been in the Senate for a long time. What are you going to do, reject me? You can slip in, and then you'll get enough free press where they could even try to kneecap you, but you're going to get free press. So your chances are better in a presidential race, and money doesn't matter as much as it does at the state and local level and in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. Still matters, and also the bigger effect is, you know, who you're beholden to. So you may win even if you raise less money in a presidential race, but you're beholden as a result of that money to those interests who paid you. So that's the effect it really has at a presidential level. But that's what this – he's like, you know, I'm going to basically jump in and try to buy this race because I'm a billionaire. And there's one thing he's forgetting. The money doesn't matter as much in a presidential race, and people don't fucking like you, and they don't – most of them don't know you, but those who know you are really fucking confused about you, and you're confused yourself. So don't waste our time, son. Don't waste our time. Like, I'm tired of these fucking big ego billionaires who are just like, yeah, no, I'll fix everything. I'll save the day. Nobody wants you to save the day, dipshit. People are actually liking what Bernie Sanders is saying on the left and what Trump is saying on the right. It's hilarious. The National Review came out with an article the other day, conservatives against Trump. The entire article was like, we as establishment conservatives love the establishment and we're against Trump. You idiot, that's exactly what he wants you to say. You're handing over more support to him. They don't get it. They don't get it. None of them get it, okay? These are people who are used to the old system. They're used to the being the establishment and getting away with being the establishment and just buying whatever they want and just mustering up support on the back end. Dude, it's not going to happen. you're not going to win, and, you know, who knows, you can hand over the election to the Democrat or the Republican, because he can get few voters from both sides, but either way, he's going to get his fucking clock clean, and he should know that. Okay, next. On Saturday, thousands of people took to the streets to do a march for Bernie Sanders. So apparently this was the first time ever that there was a march specifically for a presidential candidate. Pretty big news, RT reports on this. One of the biggest crowds gathered in Chicago, with thousands of others who support the Democratic Party contender marching in Massachusetts, New York, California, Louisiana, Michigan, Texas, and other states. Supporters in at least 35 cities took to the streets. So, again, guys, this is unprecedented. 35 cities? Thousands of people just go march in the street to say, I'm with Bernie Sanders. I mean, as somebody who leans in Bernie's direction anyway, I look at that and I'm like, damn, like that's such a showing of support, and it's even slightly unnecessary, too. Like, it just seems random. Like, yeah, on a Saturday before the Iowa caucus, we're just going to march like crazy because we like Bernie. He's generating a lot of grassroots support. You cannot deny that. And it's not just, like, a lot of people are trying to make the comparison to Ron Paul. I don't think that's a fair comparison, because Ron Paul, while he did have very, you know, loud supporters and people who were fervently on his side and advocates for his message, the difference is when you look at national polling on virtually any political issue, a guy like Ron Paul, many of his beliefs were genuinely minority positions that people don't have, they don't agree with. I mean, you know, as much as I agree with the guy on social policy, on economic policy, this idea that we should have almost no government whatsoever. I mean, obviously some judicial branch, you know, cops and all that stuff, but basically try to limit as much as possible. While there are people who strongly believe in that, it's a minority position. It is what it is. Whereas what Bernie's advocating for, when you go issue by issue, the American people are almost in total agreement with him. An overwhelming majority on virtually all the issues are like, yeah, that guy. So I don't think the situation is comparable. I think there is more support for Bernie, and I think we're seeing that in stuff like this, and also in the polls now, whether you look in Iowa or New Hampshire, in some polls Bernie is leading, which is tremendous. Whether you look nationally, Bernie Sanders is within 10 points of Hillary Clinton, when just a few months ago he was about 50 points back. I mean, this is nothing to scoff at. And now you see the establishment. They're getting nervous. They don't know what to do. Like, oh, my God, Hillary was the guaranteed one. Oh, my God, what's happening? Your guy's actually saying things that people like. Shut him up, please. Hillary, why can't you pretend to care about people better? That's where we're at right now. So even though we had marches in 35 cities with thousands of people on Bernie's side, and even though it was trending number one worldwide on Twitter, I mean, that's unbelievable, worldwide trending number one, has the mainstream media covered it? No. In fact, coverage was described as, quote, nearly non-existent. You want to know what they were focusing on? The weather. That's literal. Now, there was a blizzard in New York and in the Northeast, and, you know, it was almost a historic blizzard. It was tremendous. So, I mean, some coverage, sure, makes sense, of course. But to cover that, and just exclude coverage of an unprecedented march in support of a presidential candidate in 35 cities, thousands of people going to march for him, trends number one worldwide. You're like, no, let's not talk about this. Okay, let's not talk about this. Why would you do that? No, but guys, you have to understand, when we talk about how the establishment is against Bernie, it's not some sort of conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy when like interests converge. You don't need a smoke-filled back room. people know what their role is. They know what their job is. Oftentimes when it comes to the media, they're hired for certain positions because of how they will cover issues, and they're the type of people who will exclude talking about stuff like this, grassroots, populist, a genuine movement that's for the people. They're so deep inside that establishment, and they're all tied together intricately, so they just... they run with the narrative that they're used to running with, and it's more of a horse race, he said, she said thing, where you only talk about the serious candidates in a serious way, the ones who raise tremendous amounts of money from billionaires and corporations and Wall Street and are taken seriously by the Beltway, and just talk about them. And anybody else, well, I mean, come on. Is this guy serious? I mean, he's Bernie Sanders. He's Bernie Sanders. Yeah, and he's Bernie Sanders. Again, I don't know why. We've spoken about this before. That's an argument people have made, or I should say a lack of an argument people have made. They just scoff. Bernie Sanders. Yeah, and what's your point? He's Bernie. Why would I take him seriously? He's Bernie. That's not an argument. And then they'll pivot to the surface things. He's old. You know, a democratic socialist, he calls himself. Oh, and they'll never get elected in the U.S., right, and the first black president would never get elected in the U.S. either until, oh, right, then it happened. Right, right. So those surface things, these Jewish atheist something, democratic socialist, go away. They're trying to not take him seriously. They're trying to avoid discussing the issues because once you discuss the issues, people go, oh, Hillary ain't really into all that serious policy substance shit, and Bernie does seem like he's into it. He seems like he cares about the people, and he actually mirrors the beliefs of the people. Not only is this a close race, it's almost not a close race in the other direction when you focus on the things that really matter. So in other words, it shouldn't be a close race for Hillary. Even with all the biases in her favor and the establishment money and the media on her side and all that stuff, it's almost like, but she's so bad on the issues that the people care about and what they want, and he's so much better and he cares about it so much more. It's like, well, no, in a world that made sense, that guy would be running away with it. But that's the point, guys, and this is the main reason why we're covering this, is that they're going to unload. I mean, you think they're unloading now? And, you know, they're trying to censor him, don't talk that much, don't talk about him that much. You think they're doing that now? Wait until he takes down Iowa or New Hampshire. They're going to go balls to the wall, dude. I wouldn't be surprised to see Hillary run an ad with a hammer and sickle. I wouldn't be surprised that they're going to make, and you know, already know the argument they're going to make, unelectable, don't vote for him, unelectable, vote for him is vote for Republican. There was an opinion piece on HuffPost earlier today, a vote for Bernie Sanders is a vote for Republican. This is the argument they're going to use, they're going to keep using it, I'm telling you, this is what they're going to do, Hillary's going to adopt this, she's impractical, okay, he's a good candidate, he's the perfect candidate, in fact, but because he's so perfect, don't vote for him, because perfect candidates will get beaten by the Republicans because something, because unelectable, old Democratic socialist, pie-in-the-sky liberal, blah, 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 vote for the serious candidate Hillary Clinton. They're trying their best now to ignore him and downplay him. They're going to unleash the hounds of hell in just a little bit when they realize he ain't fucking going away. So your job is to double down and fight that much harder for him. Your job is, look, you know he's not taking money from Wall Street. You know he's not taking money from big money interests. So send him $5, send him $20, you know, or campaign. Make a phone call or two. Talk to your family members, whatever the fuck you got to do, because there is a bias in the establishment against him, and we see it. If there were these marches for Hillary Clinton, you think it would have been covered? You know the answer to that question. If there were marches in 35 cities for Donald fucking Trump, you think it would be covered? Not only would it be covered, people would be like, what blizzard? There's a blizzard happening? I didn't know there was a blizzard happening. They would have cameramen there in all 35 cities talking to the supporters. Bernie does it. So they've handicapped you. You got to overcome it. And then if you can do that, sky's the limit. I got to take a break here. When we come back, Donald Trump released a new ad, and it's actually really good. pains me to say that, but it's true. You got to be objective when you talk about this stuff. And then we got Bernie Sanders gets establishment questions, and he tries to bat them off. You got Li Fang asking Hillary Clinton a serious question, and her response is hilarious. You don't want to miss any of this stuff, man. Stay right there. We'll be right back. I got one more on Bernie in just a second here, but first, I want to do the Trump story. So Donald Trump released a new ad, and it's actually really, really good. I mean, like, really good. In fact, I'd go as far as to say it's almost a perfect ad. Now, everybody knows I'm not a fan of Donald Trump. I wouldn't vote for him. I think he's hideous. I think he's a pseudo-fascist, blah, 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 blah. The list goes on and on. Everybody knows that. But we have to be objective when analyzing these things and try to view it through the eyes of, you know, your average Republican voter and people who might vote in the Republican primary, and even perhaps try to view it through the eyes of somebody who's kind of apolitical, but maybe every once in a while votes. And when you do that, again, I think the takeaway from this ad is devastating for the other Republican primary candidates. So let's watch, and then I'll explain why it's so good.
The establishment, the media, the special interest, the lobbyists, the donors, they're all against me. I'm self-funding my campaign. I don't owe anybody anything. I only owe it to the American people to do a great job. They are really trying to stop me. Everybody knows it. Everybody sees it. We're going to win. We're going to win it for the people. We're going to win it for our country. We're going to make America great again.
Yeah. That ad is clearly populist, which is something that people like on the left and the right. A lot of people don't acknowledge that about the right, but there's a, you know, they want somebody who is not going to sell out to the interest that they dislike. You know, they're not big fans of Wall Street either, but they don't want people selling out to George Soros. They don't want people selling out to teachers' unions or what have you, lawyers, you name it, certain special interests and lobbyists. And the ad is overwhelmingly anti-corruption. The message in that ad is, I'm anti-corruption. Everybody else who's running here, they are puppets to the lobbyists and the billionaires and Wall Street, and they're going to do their bidding. I'm not going to do their bidding. I'm financing my own campaign. I'm in this thing for you guys. I'm in this thing for the American people. Now, again, you and I disagree with that. We think he's a narcissist and he's a buffoon, and he probably doesn't even know what policies he would really push for once in office. But that message is something that resonates across the board. And the saddest part of all this is that the people on the right fucking clueless as to, you know, why it is he's doing so well. And when I say the people on the right, I mean the other candidates in this respect. They're like, oh, I don't get it. Why is he doing so well? Because of that. Now, there's other things, too. His over-the-top confidence and arrogance, and he's this authoritarian figure, this daddy figure that people on the right like to latch onto. He also contradicts himself all the time, which is not a downfall in a Republican primary, because they just read into what you said, whatever they want you to have said. They'll pick only the good stuff that they like. But this is one of the biggest parts as to why he's doing so well, is that he says stuff like this. And everybody else on the right is like, I don't get it. I've been taught my whole political career that the best thing to do is to sell out to the big money interests. That's what I've been taught. So what is this guy's coming in here and turning everything over, flipping politics knowledge 101, insider knowledge 101 on its head, and I don't even know what the fuck to do. Marco Rubio, the last time Trump made an argument like this in one of the debates, Marco Rubio argued against him on this point in the debate. You fucking idiot. That's not what you're supposed to do. Because everybody's going to look at you like, what? What he said is indisputable. I mean, obviously, you shouldn't be listening to the big money people that give you stuff. And Trump's just busting him up on that. Like, oh, go ahead. Here, I'll give you some rope. Go ahead. You tell me how much you love taking money from Sheldon Adelson and giving him an oil bath every night, rubbing his balls. Only I would throw that in the middle of the story. No, but this is going to resonate. And, you know, as I heard this earlier today, my hands were on my head and my jaw hit the ground. I'm like, oh, my God. He's probably going to win the Republican nomination. Like, I've said this before up to this point. Like, I've said that he's the guy to beat. He's the front runner. Today was the first time it actually hit me where I was like, no, I think he's probably going to win. It's not just his race to lose anymore. It's probable that he wins the nomination. Why? Because of stuff like this. And understand, what he's saying isn't even true. As I've explained to you guys before, I think it was the Washington Post released a story about how Trump met with all the billionaires who finance all the other Republican candidates, whether it's Jeb or Marco Rubio, and he asked them for money. They said no. And then he's like, okay, now I'm going to go hit the campaign trail and argue against this corruption and the billionaires giving him money. So he only said no because he was rejected by those people. So he's only against it for that reason. So it's all a charade. He doesn't really hold this as a conviction like a guy like Bernie Sanders does. But either way, that message is going to resonate. Either way, people are going to go, okay, that guy's for me, so I'm for that guy because he's going to do what I want and he's against, you know, the fucked up system in Washington. People underestimate, man, just how much everybody hates these insiders and this Washington establishment culture of corruption. There's a reason why in all these polls you see like 13% of the American people, you know, have a favorable view of Congress. And then all these clowns on the right go out there and they're like, vote for this guy because he's the most pro-establishment. What the fuck? But nobody wants that. What are you saying? As I was telling you guys, the National Review wrote a piece conservatives against Trump or something like that. I read the piece. I'm facepalming the whole time. Why? Because every argument they make is like big money can't control him. He's not establishment enough. Don't vote for him. Well, that's going to make people want to vote for him more, you jackasses. So we're witnessing a phenomenon here, man. And I'm telling you, if Hillary is the one that's up against Trump in the general election, look out. The impossible may happen. It could be that Trump beats Hillary. Now, if Bernie Sanders is against Trump, there I don't think Trump really has any chance at all. Why? Because you take away Trump's main argument from him. Trump's main argument that he's going to use against Hillary would be, I'm not bought, you're bought. I'm against corruption, you're for it. You gave speech to Goldman Sachs for hundreds of thousands of dollars? I didn't. Who do you guys want to vote for, America? The one who's obviously bought or me? Who's looking out for you? Make America great again. People are going to hear that and they're going to go, maybe I'll vote for him. Maybe, I don't know if anybody else will, but I'll vote for him and be quiet about it. That could happen. With Bernie, how's he going to make that argument? And then what Bernie would do is whatever the fuck Trump says, whatever bombastic, over-the-top shit he says, Bernie wouldn't let him fucking get away with it. Bernie would be like, wait, okay, let's stop talking about the way my hair looks or that I'm a Jew or this or that. Hello, the American people are in trouble, and they're in trouble because of the corruption in Washington. You say you're against it. I'm actually against it. I have a track record of being against it, and here are my policy proposals in order to fight back against it. What are yours, Donald? And then when you try to get into policy with Donald Trump, and then Bernie runs roughshod over him. So we're in a weird spot, man. I think Trump is probably going to be the nominee. And for the record, I don't think he's going to win Iowa. I think Cruz is going to win Iowa. And then New Hampshire, don't know. But I think Trump is probably going to be the nominee. And then we'll have to see what happens on the Democratic side here. But the impossible now seems possible, and that is a Donald Trump presidency, because people keep underestimating him when he's low-key running a fantastic campaign. He's wrong on all the substance. He's a pseudo-authoritarian or fascist, or maybe just a plain authoritarian or fascist. But he knows how to garner this grassroots support. It's something that's real, and we need to counter that with another true grassroots support campaign. We know who that is, and it ain't Hillary Clinton. Okay, next. Bernie Sanders went on ABC's show this week with Martha Raddatz, and he was asked some deeply establishment questions. So let's watch, and then I'll explain to you guys why this line of questioning is so absurd.
Clinton supporters have been focusing on you as a non-viable general election candidate, yep, largely because you're a Democratic socialist. Senator Claire McCaskill saying the Republicans won't touch him because they can't wait to run an ad with a hammer and sickle. Your reaction?
My reaction is two things. Look at every or virtually all of the national polls that have been done, which have Bernie Sanders running against Trump, Hillary Clinton running against Trump. We run significantly better than does Hillary Clinton. We're beating them by a wider margin. Last NBC poll, I think, had us beating them by 15 points. In New Hampshire, we're doing even better than that. We're doing better than Hillary Clinton against Trump here in Iowa. Second of all, Democrats win when voter turnout is large. Republicans win when the American people are demoralized. Our campaign is exciting millions of people. We will have a large voter turnout. I think we can not only win the White House, but we can regain the Senate and win governor's chairs up and down throughout this country. So I think what this campaign is about is who's exciting the American people. I think our campaign is, Martha.
Senator Sanders, you said something to your supporters yesterday that caught my ear. You quoted with pride a Wall Street Journal article calling you a viable candidate, saying it appears that we are making Wall Street a little bit nervous, and that's a good thing. The article was quoting Blackstone CEO Steve Schwarzman, who said the markets are unsettled because of you, a slowdown in China, and geopolitical risks. You're laughing, but I want to know, why is it a good thing that the markets are in turmoil? People have their pension funds in the market. Lots of middle-class people have their 401ks invested in stock. It's not just Wall Street.
The reason,
everybody's affected
the reason
by this.
The reason that I am laughing is I fully admit to having a big ego, like many other politicians. But the idea that Bernie Sanders' candidacy, because it has growing support all over this country, is unsettling world markets is absolutely absurd. The point that I was making is we are getting the attention of Wall Street. Wall Street's greed and recklessness and illegal behavior drove this economy into the worst recession since the Great Depression. Millions of people lost their homes, their life savings, and their jobs. And yes, I believe that we have to break up the major financial institutions, we have to reestablish Glass-Steagall, and that we are now gaining the attention of Wall Street tells me that our campaign is doing very well.
Look at the framing of those questions, because oftentimes I'll say something like, the establishment is against Bernie Sanders. People are like, what do you mean? I don't see that. What are you talking about? It's subtle, and it's in stuff like the framings of the questions that they ask him, because it's undeniable that that's a right-wing, pro-establishment framing. Again, I got no problem if you want to be tough on Bernie, but you're focused on policy substance. But the problem is they don't do that, and they can't do that. Why? Because once you get into policy substance, you realize he's representing the overwhelming majority of the American people, and his policies are totally coherent, and they make sense, and they're intelligent. So since they can't go after him in that way, what do? They do the bullshit framing that just makes no sense. So they ask him right up, well, I'm told by people in the establishment on the Democratic side who are pro-Hillary Clinton, by the way, that, you know, you're unelectable because you're Democratic Socialist, because you're Democratic Socialist. That's your question? Okay, the problem with that is, look at the poll. So they would cite a poll, hey, look, the poll that says that the American people would never vote for a socialist. So look at that, conversation over. Yeah, but the American people would never vote for the first black president. Until they do, until they did. The guy's middle name was fucking Hussein. We were fighting a war against a guy named Saddam Hussein. They were like, yeah, no, I'm going to vote for that guy. So, you know, questions like that are kind of absurd to begin with, but he is quite literally electable. If you look at the polls, he's beating Trump and all of the Republicans by a wider margin than Hillary Clinton. So if you're going to be objective, and you're going to ask Bernie Sanders that question, you got to ask Hillary Clinton that question. Nobody has ever asked Hillary Clinton once, hey, you know, perhaps you're not electable. They never asked her, ever, when she's doing worse against the Republican candidates, which means she is, by definition, less electable in a general election than Bernie Sanders. But they'll never ask her that. Never ask her that. No, it's just a given that Hillary Clinton is electable because that's what the establishment thinks. That's what they want. That's what they believe. Therefore, I'm not going to be like a journalist here and question orthodoxy with facts. No, I'm just going to buy into the bullshit framework that they're throwing at Bernie and say, aren't you unelectable, even though you're beating the Republican candidates by more than Hillary Clinton? And he's leading in some polls in Iowa and New Hampshire. Unelectable, my ass cheeks. Are you kidding me? This is a guy who was 40, 50 points back months ago. Now he's only 10 behind at a national level. He's surging on a level we've never seen anybody before. Perhaps you're unelectable, you know. You only gained fucking 40 points over the past few months. Don't you need to gain 48 before we can consider you electable? Shut the fuck up. And then, an even more absurd question after that, why are you responsible for the market crashing? What the fuck are you saying? You're like, why are you laughing as if it's funny that the market is crashing because of you? He's like, no. I think Wall Street is scared of me, and we know because CEOs on Wall Street say, hey, we're scared of him, but I'm not responsible for the fucking markets crashing right now. Oh, my God, imagine if it's a President Bernie Sanders, the stuff they're going to blame on him that has nothing to do with him. Like, I'm telling you guys, and I've been saying for a while, I think there's going to be another economic crash. There are just too many systemic problems, too many fundamental flaws in our economy, whether it's the student loan debt crisis, whether it's reinflating the mortgage bubble. There's so many issues, derivatives, unregulated market. We're guaranteed to have another crash. I think it's going to happen. If Bernie Sanders gets in, it's still going to happen. He can't change everything overnight or even over 2 years, right? So there's going to be another crash. Let's say he gets elected. Everything will be blamed on him from day one. They're blaming him right now for the market going down when he ain't even in office. They're like, you know, hey, why is it that you're responsible for that? He's like, I'm not. That's why I fucking was laughing at it. They assumed he was laughing at it because he wants people to be hurt economically. His whole campaign is about the opposite of that. His whole campaign is about looking out for the American people. And furthermore, the market is not a good indication of how the middle class in America is doing. The market is an indication of how the rich are doing. When you look at the breakdown as to who owns stocks, it's overwhelmingly the top 10% and more the top 1% of Americans. But see how they frame the question? The top 1% and 5% are, you know, blaming you already for the downfall, the downturn of the market. Aren't they right? No! What the fuck kind of a question is that? They can't discuss real policy stuff, substance, because he's right on the substance. So just throw establishment horse shit at him. Guys, there was a march on Saturday. 35 different cities. Thousands of people came out to march for Bernie. Just for Bernie. It was a We Are Bernie march. How much coverage did it get? Bupkis. Almost non-existent. Quote, nearly non-existent, they said in an article about this. No mainstream media coverage. They're trying to get him to lose, okay? They want him to lose. They do. They're part of the establishment. They rub elbows with Hillary Clinton, you know, at the country club. They're against a guy like Bernie because he's for the American people. He's against the interests of just the elite. He'll represent you. He won't represent them, okay? They're going to continue to try to kneecap his campaign. So the more they push against you and him, the more you should push back against them. Whether it's sending $5 or $10 or $20 to donate to his campaign or making some phone calls or talking to your family members, explaining why his campaign is the best, yada, yada. Don't let them win, man. We can't have the establishment win. You know, we tried an establishment centrist Democrat approach this time around with Obama. Yeah, we got 10%, 15%, 20% change in the right direction. People are still struggling and they're hurting. You need a New Deal kind of Democrat. You need an FDR part two. You know who that person is, and don't make the mistake here of getting lazy and not standing up and fighting for the best candidate. Okay. Now we go to Hillary Clinton and her repeated failures. Li Fang is a reporter for The Intercept, and he decided to ask Hillary Clinton a real question at one of her campaign events, and take note here of how she responds. Now, you know, pay close attention to her face, how she absorbs the question, because she can't make the argument, hey, I didn't hear it, okay? She heard it, she paid attention to it, and then she decided to respond in a specific way. Let's watch, and then we'll discuss.
Secretary Clinton, will you release the transcript of your paid speeches to Goldman Sachs? No, there's a lot of controversy over the speeches. Secretary. Is that a no? Secretary Clinton, will you release the transcript of your Goldman Sachs speeches? Yes.
She thinks that she's in a room that already supports her big time. So she's out there shaking hands with, you know, the peasants and saying, oh, yeah, I love you. I love you more. Oh, my God, you're such an inspiration. And then a journalist decides to actually do some journalism. And he's like, hey, those speeches you did for Goldman Sachs where you made $675,000. You want to release the transcripts? She listed the whole question. She's like, move on to the next person. Could it be any more obvious? I mean, look, so if she really felt like she has nothing to hide and this isn't a conflict of interest and, you know, she's not going to represent them, wouldn't you respond like this? No. Or, I'm sorry, what was the question? Will you release the transcripts? I'm sorry. The real way you should respond is yes. Or let's say, hey, for whatever reason, there aren't transcripts. I would, but we don't have transcripts. Okay, will you release the video? There's no video either. I wouldn't be doing this segment if she responded like that. But yeah, I'll release it. Or there isn't a transcript. Or, hey, you know, there's no video, but if we come across one and somebody made one in the room, sure, we'll release it. That's how you respond if you really feel like you have nothing to hide. Now, by the way, even if she did respond like that, it still wouldn't change the fact that that money buys influence. So let's be perfectly clear about that. But the way she responds, guilty, pound the gavel, it's over. She knows that what she's doing is a conflict of interest, it's legalized bribery, it's corruption. So just try to brush it under the rug in a really awkward way so as to pretend like you didn't hear it because it made you massively uncomfortable because you know that that's a real question and it exposes the true nature of your campaign, which is I'm the person who is pro-Wall Street, pro-corporate lobbyists, pro-big money interests. Yeah, I'll be a Democrat kind of on the social issues when it's convenient and when I can get away with it, but on economic issues, I'll give you 2% change, 5% change, and then I'm going to need you to shut up because I'm in here to do the bidding of the people who pay me. And that's Wall Street, that's lobbyists, that's big moneyed interests. Now, having said all that, listen to this fact. This is incredible. Quote, she has recently been on the defensive about the speaking fee she and her husband have collected. Those fees total over $125 million since 2001. $125 million in speaking fees. $125 million in speaking fees since 2001. Guys, that doesn't even include the campaign contributions. That doesn't even include when you run for office and you have big money interests, you know, paying you money or giving it to your super PAC or whatever the case is. That doesn't include that. So it's way more than that. Way more than that. But that's just in speaking fees, which is money directly from corporations and the rich into her pocket for speaking when she happens to not be in office at any particular time, when she's not a senator, when she's no longer the Secretary of State, when she has a break before she runs for office. Okay, everybody, pay me, pay me, pay me, pay me, pay me, and then you're buying influence for if slash when I become president. You call, I'm going to answer, and hey, you need a corporate subsidy, a welfare check? Here you go. You paid me for speeches. You helped fund my campaign. And the people? Yeah, the people take a back seat. First, I'm going to return the favors to the people who put me here. This is exactly the problem with Hillary Clinton. And by the way, this is why she is more unelectable than Bernie Sanders. Because Bernie Sanders in the general election, whoever he's against on the Republican side, he could say, I'm not bought, you're bought. Where's the debate here? Vote for me, I'm going to represent you. This asshole's not. Whereas Hillary, she's going to have to explain away her corruption. $125 million in personal speaking fees since 2001, never mind the money she takes for her various campaigns. What are you going to say? We know what she's going to say because she stumbled before when she was asked about this. Yeah, I took money from Wall Street because 9/11. That's not an argument. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Actually, it's the second dumbest thing I've ever heard. The first dumbest thing is your response here. Hey, are you going to release the transcript for those Goldman Sachs speeches? Yeah, I'll take that as a no. But here's the reality. On the transcripts, we know because there was some reporting about this at the time when she took the $675,000 for speeches to them. She spoke about how the bankers are so misunderstood and how it's really not their fault. What happened with the economy is really not their fault. Not only is that bad enough because you're giving that speech on Wall Street, it's worse because Goldman Sachs, specifically, we know Goldman Sachs had fraud as a business model. They would sell toxic products to clients, the subprime mortgages, and tell them, you're going to make so much money from this. Then they turn around and bet on those products that they just sold as good. They would bet on those products to fail. So you make money both ways. Sell a shitty product, knowing it's shitty, but pretending it's good, and then you bet on that product to fail. And then when it does fail, you made money two ways. One, off the clients who were suckers, who you pushed a shitty product on when you knew it was shitty, and the other because you bet on the stock on these packages to fail, and they did. Fraud was a business model. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to go speak for these people. They give me hundreds of thousands of dollars. Then they could do it some more and get away with it because I'll represent them when I'm president. Which is exactly why we don't want you to be president. I don't have time to do another one before the break here. Let's take our final break, and then when we come back, I got a bunch of awesome stories in the final 30 minutes for you. I'm going to keep going off, man. I got a lot of pent-up stuff here. That actually sounded kind of gross. Pent-up anger here from over the weekend. We'll continue with Lena Dunham going to bat for Hillary Clinton. And a story about guns from over the weekend, which is just so heartbreaking and so American in so many ways. Stay right there. Dunham sat down with Variety magazine, and she claimed that media coverage of Hillary Clinton was sexist, quote, in every single portrayal. That's a bold claim. Let's see what she said.
The way that Hillary Clinton's been talked about in the media is so gendered and rabidly sexist in every single portrayal. The adjectives, whether it's the attacks on her personal life or the adjectives that are used to describe her clothing, we have to do a full reexamination. Like, I literally want to make a list that we hand to media outlets that says, like, these are the words you can't use when describing a female candidate. Shrill, inaccessible, difficult, frumpy, plastic. I mean, there's just a list of words that if we were allowed to talk about male candidates like that, I'd have a fucking field day. I'd enjoy my life so much. Sorry, I get too worked up.
Okay, well, first of all, we do use those terms against male candidates. I know. I do it. Not only do I do it, one of the specific examples she gave there, she's like, plastic, we can't call the men plastic. Go back and look at my tweets during any of the Democratic debates or the Republican debates. Virtually every time Marco Rubio opens his mouth, I send out a picture of a Ken doll and, you know, mock him with whatever the fuck he's saying. Martin O'Malley, same thing. I look for, like, blonde hair plastic dolls and tweet out the picture mocking him because he's so plastic and so fake, and he's obviously putting on that politician's cadence and rhythm and act and style of being and talking and all that stuff. Same with Marco Rubio, same with Martin O'Malley. I've referred to them as plastic hundreds of times. Hillary Clinton, I've referred to as plastic zero times. I have many problems with Hillary Clinton. None of them are that, you know, she's not a good speaker. In fact, I think she's a really good speaker. She doesn't come across very politician-y, you know. I mean, maybe a little bit, but not overly politician-y like Martin O'Malley comes across and like Marco Rubio and others come across. So, you know, you're just wrong in saying, hey, nobody refers to men in this way. They do, and I have specific examples of it. All right, but furthermore, you're not even trying to make a coherent argument because some of those terms are in no way, shape, or form sexist. So, for example, you said inaccessible and difficult. Okay, people say that she's difficult because she's difficult. There's been people who have worked with her closely for years who are like, yeah, she's kind of hard to get along with, and, you know, she's kind of a perfectionist in how she wants people around her to act and how they treat her. I mean, there were some reports that she asked for riders when she gives a speech. A rider, like she's a rock star or something, like she's J-Lo. You know, other politicians don't do this as much as she does. There were reports that she didn't like a specific podium that was, you know, that was given to her at a speech she was going to give at a university. So they had to get rid of the podium and bring in a new podium. Okay, that's difficult. That has nothing to do with gender. If a dude was acting like that too, we would say the same thing, okay? And inaccessible, again, people say she's inaccessible, and they said it at the time when she was refusing to do media interviews. That's the definition of inaccessible. She's not giving access to the media. Now, you can agree or disagree with her deciding to do that, and perhaps it was a smart political strategy at the time, but that is the definition of inaccessible. It's got nothing to do with your gender. If a man made the same decision, people would say he's inaccessible too. But that's the thing. It's like, you have your conclusion, it's sexist, everything is sexist, and you're just working backwards to that. And the biggest point here is that undermines sexism. Because now, when something is really and truly sexist, what's going to happen? Otherwise, good people are going to roll their eyes and go, here we go again with the fucking bullshit claims of sexism. I heard the other week when it was Lena Dunham saying everything about Hillary was sexist, and, you know, I know that that's not true because the arguments were weak and not true. So now every claim of sexism, roll your eyes, is fucking, it's all bullshit. You're actively hurting the cause that you claim to care about the most. And look, man, let's face it. This isn't a situation where we're really focused on policy substance anyway. We're just playing the identity politics word game here. Sexist, racist, this, that. And you're not, okay, well, let's talk about policy specifics. Let's talk about policy specifics, and let's go down the list here, and let's see who agrees more with the overwhelming majority of the American people and pushes for the most substantive things, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. You don't want to have that conversation because then the person you endorsed would be the wrong person. Okay, next. The right-wing militants who took over a federal building and wildlife preserve in Oregon have officially lost their minds. So one of them is an Idaho man named Kelly Neatling, and he went after Chris Christie in a video because Chris Christie went after them and said, hey, if I was in charge, I would send in law enforcement and I would bust up this takeover that they did. But the way in which this guy responded to Christie is nothing short of sheer lunacy. Let's watch.
Hi, my name is Kelly, and I have a message for my younger brother, Chris Christie. Governor Christie, how long's it been since you've seen your older brother, Kelly? Yeah, I know Mom gave us both girl names, but I want to see who the real sissy is. Because you got out in front of the cameras the other day, and you talked about how you'd like to see the strong arm of the law disperse these good folks in Oregon. You know what I want to see? I want to see you come over here and disperse me, your older brother, in Tokyo. Woohoo, little Christie! Remember we used to call you that all the time? Remember we used to call you little Christie? Remember all those times I'd throw you in the sleeping bag and roll you down the stairs? Good times. I'm talking about you coming over here, and we're going to show these good constitutional folk in Oregon. We'll show all Oregonians and all Americans who the family sumo champ is. Remember all those times we used to tussle in the front room? Man, we'd go all night sometimes, from dusk till dawn. But now we're adults. And, you know, we both have about this pretty much the same body frame. You might be a little bigger. So bring that big old belly over here, and let's slap bellies. I'm talking about 10 bouts. Now, you win one out of those 10. Me and these other good sumo constitutional folk, I'm going to make them sumo wrestlers soon. All these good constitutional folk will disperse. But if I win all 10, I get a... roll you down the stairs in that sleeping bag again. Woohoo! Little Christie! Going to war on the shore. Little Christie and his big brother Kelly wearing diapers and slapping bellies just like when we were toddlers. We all remember those times I used to change your diaper. Well, I know you don't, but I do. And I want you to throw a diaper on again and let's go to war over Mama's love. But most importantly, let's go to war over who's right. Let's go to war over the Constitution and for Mama's love. Woo-hoo! Come on, little Christie! Woo!
What the fuck did I just watch? That guy has some serious, unresolved sexual issues. Something's going on there. I love how he tried to pretend like this was about other stuff at times. He's like, yeah, it's about the Constitution. That's why I'm standing here in a diaper talking about slapping bellies with you. This has nothing to do with the Constitution. Nothing to do with any kind of political issue. You know, this is a guy who saw that people in Oregon took over, was turned on, thought that perhaps he could get some action there, shows up there. He's like, all right, who's ready to wear diapers and slap bellies? Roll around in the mud a little bit. Let's get manly. Let me see your dick. What? Did I say that out loud? We're not at that point yet, but later maybe I'll see your dick. Oh, come on, bro. What are you, gay? Go away. this guy, listen to some of the stuff he said. He goes, quote, disperse me. I'd like to see you disperse me. There's a lot of interpretations of that. Eddie said, we used to tussle. He's speaking to Chris Christie here, because Christie was like, I'm going to come in there and bust up this, you know, militia takeover. He said, we used to tussle in the front room. We'd go all night sometimes. Oh, would you? Tell me about how you like to go all night with Chris Christie and how you clearly thought about this. Then he talks about, let's slap bellies. Sure, they're sumo wrestling, if you know what I'm saying. And then, of course, he just dropping the bomb that somehow is even weirder than all the other stuff. Remember when I used to change your diaper? I'd like to do that now. I mean, no. I'd totally not like to do that now. But seriously, come here wearing a diaper and let's slap bellies and stuff. Dude, let it out, okay? For whatever reason, you get turned on by weird, you know, dudes who are kind of doing a terrorist takeover when you think about it, because they took over by force with guns a government building. Something about that turns you on, so you're showing up there like, all right, slap bellies, let me change diapers. You got a hard-on? I'll take care of that. And for whatever reason, man, you just want to broadcast this to the world. Dude, you're not doing a good job of hiding it. You know, like, he strikes me as one of those anti-gay Republicans who's like, let me tell you, I am like so anti-gay, like gays should not be allowed to get married. Hey, am I right? Just let it out, man, let it out. You know, go live your life and be open and be happy. You don't, when you repress shit for so long, you end up sending a video out on the internet to Chris Christie wearing a diaper wanting to slap bellies with him. I think the message is don't repress shit. And for the federal government, look, a lot of people were questioning their original move here to give these guys rope, this right-wing militia who took over this government building in Oregon. They were like, come on, you know, if it was black people or Muslims, you would respond differently. I think that's totally true that they would respond differently if it was black people or Muslims or virtually any other kind of armed group. But either way, perhaps this was the right move, and perhaps it would have been the right move no matter who the fuck it is, because when they're this goofy, they're letting them commit more and more crimes and make a bigger ass of themselves, so that later on when they actually bring them to court, they're like, yeah, we have you on video destroying government property, as has happened already, and we have a laundry list of crimes you broke. We gave you room, and you started breaking more and more laws, so now you're going to spend more time in jail. I think in the end it was a good move, and this is kind of becoming a reality show of its own, and it's cringeworthy, but I can't look away. All right, now let's go to Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann, who was in the House of Representatives for over a decade, is going to explain to you her philosophy of government here. Let's watch.
Because in your
House of Representatives,
around
in the U.S. Capitol,
23 lawgivers are honored, because that is the place where the law comes, out of the House. So you have 23 lawgivers, and they're all side profile views except one, and that's
Moses. And can I just say, I have literally had tears come to my eyes. I've given speeches on this on the House floor. I stand in that chamber surrounded by the greatest lawgivers in history. Solon, Suleiman, Justinian, Innocent III, Hammurabi, all of the lawgivers of history, like you said, in their side profile. But above the main double doors, the doors that the President of the United States enters when he's going to give the State of the Union address, that door is the door above that has a full-on, full-face view of only one lawgiver, and that's of Moses. And as we know, a holy God gave to Moses the moral law, the Ten Commandments, the law upon which every other law has descended, and upon which no other law, if it violates that moral law, could stand, because that is the ultimate law. How interesting. The face of Moses looks down upon the Speaker of the House.
That's right. But when you become secular, you ignore jurisdictions. Those jurisdictions given by the lawgiver of the Bible, given by Moses through God. And it's
so sad.
This thing
because
right
it
here,
degrades us.
It does.
The nation. It degrades our liberties, and it degrades the greatness of the nation. And that's what God understood from Old Testament times. The greatness of the nation is built up by his law.
The greatness of the nation is built up by God's law, by the Bible, by Christian law. I mean, this is somebody who was in Congress for over a decade, and she is admittedly a theocrat. She doesn't believe in the First Amendment, in the Constitution. You know, the whole idea of the United States is that you're supposed to not marry together church and state. You're supposed to not establish a religion. what she's talking about here is the exact opposite. She's like, no, that we're supposed to establish a religion. How do I know? Moses' face or something in Congress. That's it. That's your argument? But you were just describing, there's Hammurabi, there's all these people. Do we try to base all of our laws on fucking Hammurabi? No. So this idea that, no, but we're supposed to be a Christian nation. Well, then point to me where it says in the Constitution that we're supposed to be a Christian nation. Point to me where it mentions the Bible. Point to me where it mentions Jesus. It doesn't mention any of that. Again, it says the opposite. And let me just throw out here as a side note, because I can't do commentary on this without bringing up what I think is the elephant in the room. Can we stop with silly music in the background? Like, that doesn't make your comments more weighty or deep if you have strange organ music playing in the background. Like, oh, like we're supposed to hear that. There's supposed to be bright light that shines. Like, oh, yes, let's implement biblical law because of the goofy music in the background as Michelle Bachmann says she's a theocrat. It doesn't make you sound more intelligent. It makes the rest of your comments sound more ridiculous somehow, even though they're bad enough on their own merit. But the music just adds an extra level of douchiness. Like, you're trying to pretend it's more intellectual than it really is. And then they say there that the Ten Commandments is the basis for all law. Well, that's not true, because when you go through the Ten Commandments, I think, what, only two of them are law? We have them right here. Do not worship any other gods. That's not a law. We have religious freedom. You can worship wherever the fuck you want. Do not make any idols. That's not a law. You can make whatever idols you want. Do not misuse God's name. Not only is that not a law, I'm going to do it right now. God damn it. Or fuck your God. Don't misuse his name. Are people going to break down my door and lock me up? No, because we live in a secular nation, and we have freedom of speech, freedom of expression. We have freedom. They're like, no, the Ten Commandments are the basis of all law, even though the majority of the Ten Commandments are not law. Figure that one out. Keep the Sabbath holy. You don't have to do that. You just not go if you don't want to go to church, or you could be of any other faith. Honor your father and mother. That's not a law. Do not murder. Finally, we got one that's a law. And by the way, pretty sure we would have figured that out without it having to be written in a mythological book. Do not commit adultery. That's not a law. Do not steal. There's a law. Again, I think we would have figured that one out without it being tied to a book that has a man that lives to age 900 who builds an ark and saves us from a flood that didn't happen. Do not lie, that's not a law. Do not covet, that's not a law. Yeah, it's not the basis of all law. They're not even all laws. Only two of them are laws. And notice, the final point I'll make here, and this is just supremely ironic. She mentioned liberty at one point. Like, oh yeah, to have a secular nation, that degrades liberty. What are you talking about? That's the opposite degrades liberty. To have a theocracy, by definition, would degrade liberty. Because you don't have liberty in a theocracy. You have to do whatever the faith commands. But it also says at the bottom right corner of the screen, freedom. Are you fucking kidding me, man? These guys are a joke. They're a joke. Like, they call for Christian theocracy and biblical law and all these draconian, archaic, disastrous, disgusting ideas that are against democracy and against constitutional rights and against liberty and against freedom. And as they do it, they say things like, no, we're on the side of liberty, and they do it on a network that has the word freedom in it. They're so confused, and they're so wrong, and the most important point is they're so idiotic. And again, this is a woman who was in the House of Representatives for over 10 years. Well done, America. All right, now we go to Ted Cruz. I'm running out of time here. I gotta speed up. Video of Ted Cruz from when he's 18 years old has surfaced. And, man, is it creepy and weird to look back at a guy who's so obviously the same person that he is today, but he kind of lets it all hang out more. Let's take a look.
Aspiration. Is that like sweat on my butt? No, no. Oh, I see. know, being a teen tit film like that guy in Play Horatio. You know, he was in Malibu Bikini Beach Shop. Well, other than that, take over the world. World domination, you know, rule everything. Rich, powerful, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so when they ask him about his aspirations, by the way, I have no clue what this was for, maybe some school thing or not, I don't know, but this popped up on YouTube. So when they ask him about his aspirations, he says, "Aspirations? Is that sweat on my butt? Get it? Because perspiration, but ass aspiration?" And then he says, "My aspiration is to be in a tit film." Seems like this, you know, very holy, super religious type character. He's definitely not exploiting that kind of person and that persona to try to get elected to the White House. No, he would never do something like that. He has, he has standards, guys. Let's be fair here. I mean, he's an honorable person, am I right? And then, of course, the one that everybody's talking about is, you know, world domination. To be rich and powerful, take over everything. That's what I want to do. World domination. Now, obviously, the kind interpretation of this is, he's joking, it's tongue-in-cheek, he's messing around. Look at the previous things he said, aspirations and tit films and this and that. So, yeah, you don't take it seriously, whatever. He's 18, move along. That's a fair point. Here's the other opposite, though. Here's the other point, I should say, the opposite point. Here's the counter-argument. We kind of sensed today that he's just a power-hungry narcissist who wants power, who wants money, who wants the glory. He wants the glory that comes with being president. And, he's kind of a classic authoritarian in that sense, and a classic narcissist, guy with a god complex. And there were stories about how his dad used to tell him he's the most important person in the world, he's going to change history, he's special, he's this, he's that, he's the savior. And it's just kind of manifesting into reality. So even if you say, hey, he was partly kidding around, it was tongue-in-cheek, or not, or he kind of really wants to have power for power's sake. And as we all know, as the old cliche goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely. You really think a guy like this is going to truly uphold the Constitution and protect your rights and, you know, draw a line where the judicial branch might say or the legislative branch might say, you ain't going too far there? I don't think so. I don't know who I'm more scared of, Trump or Cruz. I think I'm actually leaning more against Cruz because Trump's a big question mark. Who knows what the fuck he'll do? And there might end up being some good, oh, hey, I'm going to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure. Why? Fuck off. That's why. There's a chance of that happening with Trump, with Cruz. I don't see that at all. I just see a dude who wants power for power's sake and, a guy who might actually end up doing all these far-right things and theocratic things to appease his base because he might on some level think that that's what makes a good president, even if he's not really religious himself. So it's a weird thing to watch, man, but that's certainly Ted Cruz, and he's a similar guy today. All right, next. News Republic is reporting on a bizarre story coming out of Tajikistan. They say, police in Tajikistan have shaved nearly 13,000 men's beards and closed more than 160 shops selling traditional Muslim clothing as part of the country's fight against what it calls foreign influences. The move is seen as an effort to battle radicalism. Last week, the country's parliament voted to ban Arabic-sounding foreign names as well. And the legislation is expected to promote secularism, they say. And in September, Tajikistan's Supreme Court banned the country's only registered Islamic political party, the Islamic Renaissance Party, after months of violence that the government blamed on radical Islamism. Okay, so let's break this down and take it step by step here. To the first one, shaving 13,000 men's beards and closing more than 160 shops that sell traditional Muslim clothing. Stupid, don't do it. Like, your whole goal, they say, is to fight radicalism. That's not going to fight radicalism. You just shaved some dudes. That's what you did. It's not like as you shave their face that, hey, this is, if they happen to be radical Islamists, this is obviously going to shave off the radical Islamism, too. No, it's not going to do that at all. And if anything, you just made it so that people who maybe or maybe not were advertising that they're strict adherents or they're literalists, now you just took that away, so you don't know. Maybe they are radical, maybe not, but we don't know if they're, you know, decked out in the garb or if they have the beard, because we just took them away. So it's not going to limit radicalism. It just makes you look like a douche, because it is a douchey move. The problem with, you know, fundamentalist Islam ain't the beards. It ain't the clothing. It's the fucking suppression of women and gays and all the negative things that take away others' rights. You shouldn't step in and take away their rights to look how they want, because that's not going to combat anything, and it makes you authoritarian and police statey. Okay, so that's the first one. Well, then when they get to ban Arabic-sounding foreign names, again, you're like trying to combat radicalism with counter-radicalism, but that's still radicalism, and it's stupid. You're taking away freedom and liberty. The problem isn't Arabic-sounding names. The problem is that what you're doing, number one, but number two, also that some people that have those names are radical Islamists and they do terrible things. But let's be against those people, not all people that have Arabic-sounding names. You're quite literally generalizing and blaming all Muslims or Arabic people for the actions of a few. And then the final two, I get what they're saying, but they're just going about it the wrong way. So when they say, look, we're trying to promote secularism, well, I would say, but you're not, because secularism is people are allowed to be whatever they want to be, as long as they're not hurting anybody else. So you can be a Buddhist, a Hindu, a Muslim, an atheist, a Christian, whatever, you know, as long as you're not taking away the rights of others. So you don't shave their beards and take away their clothes, because that's not the problem. The problem is that some in that community, take away the rights of others. So prevent that. Try to fight that. Don't take away things that have nothing to do with that. So you're not promoting secularism. I wish you would promote secularism, but you're not. And then the banning of the political party, look, that one I get, because so should that group be allowed to exist? Yes, the group should be allowed to exist. But should they be a political party where they run for office on a platform of we will implement a theocracy? No. And I'm against it when Muslims do that. I'm against it when Christians do that. If Pat Robertson created a political party here in the U.S. and said it's the Christian Revival Party and we will literally try to implement biblical law, I'd say no. I'm not going to let you be a political party because we're a secular nation. So your group can exist, but you can't run for office on a Christian theocrat platform because that's against secularism. So, and secularism is non-negotiable. So I get the banning of the political party. The group should still be allowed to exist, but not run for office. If they want to run for office, you know, on a different platform, fine. But theocracy is not one that's up in the air. So it's a mixed story here, but the core of the story is, don't fucking shave them and take away their clothes. That has nothing to do with the things that you're really against, which are radical Islamists. And in reality, you're the ones in this story that are radical, because you're taking radical actions that are authoritarian in nature to combat radicalism. But that doesn't make any sense, because you're not even combating the radicalism, and your actions on their own merit are radical. Okay. I'm out of time. Got some stuff left over here that we'll discuss tomorrow. Love you guys. I'll try to live tweet this town hall thing tonight, this Democratic town hall. Everybody have a great night, and we'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Peace.